You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist-inspired radio brought to you by CKUT and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy. The Dragon Root has two genders and symbolizes the diversity of every body and every mind on the gender spectrum. Tune in every Tuesday morning from 8:39 on 90.3 FM or ckut.ca/listen. You can also pick up and choose from our archives at center2110.org. We bring you reports from the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, live tunes from feminists, queer, trans, and gender-aware musical guests, and interviews about a wide array of social justice issues examined through a gender-perceptive lens. And today on Dragon Root, we're having our May Day special, where we'll be discussing women in the labor movement and labor activism. International Labor Day is observed to celebrate the social and economic achievements of those in the working class and labor unions. And today on Dragon Root, we'll be celebrating with Juliana Fumagalli. Juliana is a passionate labor activist with the Canadian Union of Postal Workers here in Montreal and is currently running for the director of the Organizing and Information Committee in the elections of the Montreal Local. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So first off, you're a labor activist in Montreal. Could you talk a bit about what it means to be a labor activist and what it entails?
Well, it means that on my work floor, that's where I see my first actions, mainly, just to make sure that we are respected, that our rights are respected, and that we just get to work in a decent environment where health and safety, first and foremost, is also observed and respected by the employer. It means, therefore, that every day you've got to be there, I guess, ready to work, but to make sure that the collective agreement is respected and then health and safety is respected.
So when did you first get involved in labor activism? Was there a specific event that...
Well, I guess basically when I started working at Canada Post and became a member of the union. And then also through educational programs run by the union. Without those educational programs, I would not be the labor activist I am today. It is something that instinctively we have, but that through the educational programs, there's a culture that has to be developed, and that is not necessarily always there. It was not necessarily in my case.
Can you elaborate on these educational programs?
Of course. Working at Canada Post, I mean, it's a big, big Crown Corporation. Lots of employees, lots of brothers and sisters. And so we, of course, have lots of protections, but the employer is... So wanting to have the work come out that often doesn't observe the rules of health and safety. And that's where it's like a big door to being aware of what is happening. And so as I was working, I was realizing that I needed to really be aware of what my rights were and to figure out how to be able to make the employer respect them. And so by taking a class here and a class there provided by the union and given by union members, I really was able to develop a conscience. I mean, I was an activist, but being an activist in groups outside of the union is very different than being in a union and active in a union. And especially, I guess, such a big union and in an environment that is basically, I work out of the Léo Blanchet plant. So the conditions are conditions of factory workers where we have lots of machines, lots of equipment, and where work has to come out. And so it was really, really through all the educational programs provided by the union that I was able to develop this conscience also as a worker, which is, I think, why we're here today. And my father was part of a union. My grandfather wasn't. So it's not as if I really had at home a history of being active in the labor movement, or even my parents being activists, period. So it was something that I had to develop. I had to create. And that awareness really came through educational programs.
So can you speak about your involvement within the Union of Postal Workers? I understand you were involved in organizing brothers and sisters of the union during the last conflict with the Postal Union.
Mm-hmm. That was actually a very personal initiative. maybe we just can backpedal in. So I started working on Canada Post in 2000, and I can say that it took me a couple of years to integrate the notions and to be aware of everything that was available to me through the union. And so my first class, if I'm not mistaken, must have been in December 2003 or around there. And it was a health and safety class. And then just, you know, session after session, taking a class here, class there, I eventually took a 5-week program. It's called the Union Educational Program. It's a 5-week program where we go beyond what our collective agreement is. We go beyond what the health and safety code within Canada Post implies. And that's where I think I really, really integrated this notion that I was a worker. And that may sound ironic, but not that I was a worker, but that I belonged to the working class. Because the notion of being middle class is so strong, and that it occults, it completely blinds the fact that we're actually working class. And it's a notion that is more and more not actually spoken about, ignored, silenced. And so it is in that class that I remember that the facilitator just told us, well, you're part of the working class. And I just was stunned. And it was like, I guess so. And which is ironic. I mean, it takes me 5 years to be working with my hands and schlepping around parcels to realize, shit, I'm actually part of the working class and I'm not middle class. Middle class is a very capitalist concept. And so to be able to say, yes, I'm part of the working class, I belong to that class, and this is where my fight actually has to be, took me some time, but now it's really, really clear. And so from there, I became a shop steward. Shortly after that program, I became a shop steward, and I've been a shop steward basically ever since. And it's not always easy, because every day you have to be there facing the employer. And it's not a question of being on a permanent, constant fight. It's just that you really have to be there present. And I also participated in organizing campaigns. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but when you go to a Pharmaprix, a Jean Coutu, Uniprix, there's Canada Post counters. People working behind those counters are actually not unionized, are not working for Canada Post. They're actually working for the owner of the drugstore. And so for us, it's unacceptable that somebody is behind a Canada Post counter doing the job that a wicked clerk would be doing in a Canada Post office. A corporate office is what we call them. And that they have nothing close to the working conditions that I have, yet they're actually doing my job, or what would be considered my job. So we organized an 8-month campaign, and we did have cards signed So everything now is in the hands of the Canadian Relations Board, where we are facing over 25 lawyers, the union, because Canada Post and the drugstores are opposing our accreditation request. It's going to be a very, very long legal battle. May take probably 10 years, if not more, because the issue is central. And, I mean, Canada Post is having people who are basically working for them without having to dish out any money. And that is affecting directly anybody who works at Canada Post, because it means that we're accepting people with conditions that are way below what we would consider standard. And so we have to fight. And that was part of the reason why in our last bargaining, which is not over, but that the negotiations stopped and failed, is that we are opposing orphan clauses. We are opposing the fact that any new employee that comes in does not have the same conditions as we do. And that's fundamental. It's central in our fight. And this is why also during the lockout this summer, I was actively participating as a rank and file member, just because it was important that we had visibility in our fight and that people understood.
Okay. So what can other unions learn from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers in terms of like their struggles?
Good question. I would say that it's important as unions to be out there and supporting, fighting for the members of their own unions, but opening up. And this is, I might be a bit of a personal vision, but I think it is shared by many in the leadership that we have to open up our struggles and partake in other, you know, issues and struggles that go beyond our own. And that is where, in this unity, in a struggle, that we will all be stronger.
So the next question involves a student movement that's going on in Quebec right now. And I'm wondering, how does this movement kind of parallel labor movements or unions?
Well, I can talk on a personal level. I can say that I am really, truly inspired by what I am seeing, and that many people within the labor movement also are very inspired. For me, the struggles are parallel and are one also. And I can say I was, you know, I am running as director of organizing and information within my local. And as I was going around meeting people, I was really trying to give them a vision that I have of what the labor movement should be, of what my union should be, what of my local should be, or the way I perceive these. And a lot has been coming also through what I've learned without the years, but also what I've been seeing out on the streets, what I've had the privilege to go to several general assemblies. I've gone to different labor strike meetings, also strike votes. I'm just in awe. I'm inspired. I think that we should really, within the labor movement, go back and see. When we have general assemblies, I can't say that ours actually represent the 6,000 members who are part of the Montreal local. And when I see what's going on in the CEGEPs, I'm just like, wow, they're actually mobilizing all the students. The students are actually coming to the general assemblies. They're actually going to the mics. They're talking, they're speaking, voicing their opinions. And they don't vote through consensus form. They do go through raised hand votes. But I mean, when they actually vote, it's because they've discussed the issue. They've discussed the point. And I don't know what to say. I'm just like, this is democracy, and this is what democracy looks like. This is how this is why the student movement is still strong and going after so many weeks, and we can say months now, it's because everything was discussed and opinions were voiced. And so, and everything is truly horizontal. I mean, when you see the three spokespersons saying, this is all we are, you know, telling the Minister of Education, telling the Prime Minister, I cannot, as an individual, give you my opinion. I can only voice the opinion of my movement. For me, it's like, wow. And it's people who are, I mean, have been activists for a couple of years, but they haven't been active for the past 20 years or 30 years. And so for me, this is truly inspirational because they actually did go back in their general assemblies and said, well, you know, we have to give, you know, we've been asked to voice our opinions about violence. And so they actually did go back and discuss it within their ranks and came back. And if I can make a parallel within when we had our strike and we had our lockout, I think it would have been nice, you know, to have meetings between our own general assemblies, and we didn't. And so this is why I'm saying I'm truly inspired, because I think that there are things that we can follow up eventually on what we're seeing actually right now. And this decision process is just wonderful. And it's not something that is, you know, 50 people, 100 people. It's thousands of students deciding. And, you know, La Classe, the same thing. I mean, when they go, they're getting their opinions. I mean, they're meeting in conventions, Congress. And, you know, they're going back to their people and everybody's discussing. And it's just going all along. And it's just so beautiful to see this going on. And in the streets, again, to see them there every day facing the cops, riot cops, and not backing down and actually saying, you know, it's like, on avance, on ne recule pas. And literally, that just means we walk, and we're not going to go walk back. A step back, and they're actually moving forward, and it's the cops moving back. For me, it's like, wow, this is just quite incredible. I mean, I am moved. And I finish work at 11:30, so I, you know, been the last couple of days running out quickly and just trying to make it for the end of the demos that are going on. But I mean, I go obviously during the demos that are going on during the day, but these evening demos, I've been going there because it's just, you have to be there to see it. You have to be there to understand it, to live it. And, I mean, again, last night, you know, cops telling everybody, you can't go west on St. Catherine. And if not, it's going to be an illegal demo. And there you have the students deciding, you know, okay, well, what do we do? You know, do we stop? Do we go forward? Last night, they just moved and didn't go as planned west on St. Catherine. And they just went back toward Square Milly-Gamelin. But, I mean, the amount of riot cops, the amount of cops that are out there is just sickening. Sickening. I mean, and they're just wasting everybody's time and energy. And I mean, so it's hats off to the students who are still there and want to make sure that it's no longer their cause. I think it's a collective cause that they're actually shouldering. I don't know if you can say this in English, but they're carrying, because it goes beyond the freeze of the student tuition fees, the tuition fees. I think now it goes beyond free education. I think it's issues that are, what kind of society do we want? What kind of public services do we want? What is education? Education is not something that you can trade. It's not a merchandise. It's not something. It's a value. It's a common good. And so labor is, for the moment, behind the students. And I think now it's time for labor to be next to the students.
Can you speak a bit about women's roles in labor movements and why it's particularly important or beneficial for women.
It's important for women to be involved within the labor movement. And but today, I mean, we're not March 8th today. It's May Day. But women in labor is still something of an, without saying an oddity, I mean, we are very few. And it's a constant struggle. Women have children, or women want to have children, and children and work are not always compatible. Children, women, and activism, a lot less. And for example, I'll give you a harsh example that's actually something that was brought up to me during these elections. One of the women running, she's actually pregnant. And she's 7 months pregnant. So she really has a very predominant, like a very huge stomach. And a woman actually asked me and said, well, why is she running if she knows she's going to be off for next year? And my arms just fell. I was speechless. And here I had to tell another woman, well, you know, not only is it her fundamental right, her partner's also running. No one's asking him how come he's running and he'll be off on paternity leave, maybe, granted, less time. His opportunities are never going to be, you know, he won't have any hurdles. And as a woman, she does. For me, it's inconceivable. And yet, it is still an issue on the agenda today. So what women who are between 20 and 50 because they can reproduce, have to stay home, or have to just stay in the ranks? No. Now it's accepting and finding a way for women to be who they are in all their diverse roles. I mean, I'm a woman, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a lover, I'm an activist, I'm a whole bunch of things. And that's who I am. I'm multiple. And so having kids, if we have kids, well, that's part of who we are, and it has to be integrated into our different roles. And we have to be accepted as such. And we shouldn't have to, already life sort of stops us and makes us take more time, which is good. I mean, it gives us time to see the stars and the sun and, you know, clouds go by, but it's not something that we can do on a daily basis. So it means that as women, even today, we still have to keep on fighting.
And just to end off, you're running for Director of Organizing Information Committee in the elections for the Montreal Local. Would you like to just briefly talk a bit about that?
Okay, today is the last day to vote, so I don't know how much I'm actually allowed to say because we're no longer allowed to campaign. But I'm running as an independent candidate. And so I'm running because I believe that I have a vision where rank and file members actually have an active role and not a passive role. And I think that we all have to somehow reappropriate ourselves of the tools we have, of our collective agreements, of everything that we have, and to take ownership. And this is basically my message beyond the whole campaign. But it's as labor activists and even as union members, rank and file, we all have, I'd say, a role to play. And that we have to take ownership of our floors and I'd say also of the streets.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT's 90.3 FM's Tuesday Morning After. A special thanks to Juliana for coming into studio today, and be sure to get out to some of the protests today. Including the feminist contingent of CLASS, who will be meeting at 6 p.m. at Molson Park. We come to the end of today's edition of Dragon Root Radio, but be sure to tune in next Tuesday morning, 8:39, to hear reports produced by the Blueprint Radio Project on gendered violence, feminist, queer, trans live musical guests, interviews, and docs about gender-based issues.